Hello, welcome to Growing Wild. I'm Charlotte Petz and you're listening to Radio Reverb on 97.2 FM, online and on digital. On this month's show we have Emily Stevens, who is the artist in residence at Pell's Pool in Lewes. We have Will Parsons of the British Pilgrimage Trust, where me and him go off on a micro pilgrimage. And then also Ruth Allen interviewing me. Before all that, let's have a song, and it's Are You With Me Now by Kate Le Bon.
There is a feeling I love buried in my brow. I have no reason to run. I see no reason.
Are You With Me Now by Kate Le Bon. All right, well, first up today we have Emily Stevens. Now, she's an artist and is currently taking up residence for the summer at Pell's Pool in Lewes. And I just thought that was a dream combination, to be an artist and to be able to do your art at Pell's Pool, which is my favourite outdoor pool. It's filled up from spring water, so it's kind of fresh water, which is brilliant, and it's not overly chlorinated, and it's outside, and it's just a really lovely, calm, beautiful place. I was intrigued to know how different it would be to do your artwork in public and to have people kind of looking over your shoulder and seeing what you're doing, and then what sort of things you create and how it's different to maybe if you were in a studio environment. So here's Emily poolside telling me a little bit more about her residency there.
Well, I'm here for the whole season, so that's May to October, and I'm just painting and drawing, basically. I was here last summer, and I just asked if I could paint, and Patrick, the assistant manager, said, yeah, sure, and then I just sort of sat around and painted. I came sort of once a week, and then they asked me to be artist in residence for this year, so I've set myself a few goals, like be here 4 times a week, which is completely unrealistic for me, but I'm trying to get here as much as possible. And I paint and I draw, and I run drop-in drawing sessions every Wednesday during term time, so I've had like a really good response to that. People just come along and sit with me and draw. I mean, I'm not a teacher, I'm not qualified, but I wanted to encourage people to do what I'm doing, because a lot of people say to me, oh, I couldn't do that. I'm like, yes, you could. And I felt like that. I felt really self-conscious the first time I came here with my paints. I felt like a complete, you know, I'm not going to swear, but that's what I felt like. And so I want to encourage people to be a bit more relaxed about it.
Yeah, I guess trying to increase people's confidence, because I know, yeah, I can feel quite shy with arriving somewhere with a note. You just feel a bit of a weirdo sometimes if you just sort of sit
with
down.
A notebook.
Yeah, sit
really?
Down with a notebook and start drawing. Or people think, oh, you're doing something that's really good. Or
yes.
There's a level of expectation of what level of product you're creating,
yeah,
instead of just being able to sit down and do whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I do feel that sometimes, but I think that's more coming from myself.
Always.
Really?
Yeah.
Like people. I mean, it's the same with swimming. Like, sometimes you're swimming and you think, I'm not a very good swimmer. Or I used to think that. Like, we were talking about learning to swim properly. But people don't care what... People are too busy thinking about themselves. And it's the same with drawing in public most of the time. Most people don't even come up to me. Or if they do, they're just, like, just curious and... But they're not really judging me. Like, it's more... They're all the judgments about whether my work's good enough to be shown in public. Or they all come from me. Which is quite annoying, because it has made me, it's frozen me a bit here. I'm just trying to get over that.
Well, that feels like maybe that's part of the process that you're going to go through of,
yeah,
this summer, maybe. I can see a couple of sketches here, and they're sort of, I mean, there's loads of different styles in there. You've got some single line, it's almost illustrative.
Yeah.
And then some that's kind of a bit more abstract.
I do a lot of, I've always drawn, so I've drawn literally since I was about 4. And I have a sketchbook with me wherever I go. I always carry a sketchbook, and my paintings come from my drawings. So I don't take photos. I do occasionally take photos, but I don't really want to paint from them. I want to paint from something like memories and a sketch. So it's more unique to me and a bit I don't like things to be really representational. So my drawings are basically lots of sketches and line drawings of the people in the pool, which has been quite entertaining. I was just trying to draw this woman and I knew she could see that I was drawing her, and so she started to try and move around, and in the end I think she just went, right, I'm just going to turn away from you completely because it's making me... I think I was making her really self-conscious.
Do you have to get permission? Do you ask permission?
I never ask permission. Should I ask
you? If you were taking a photo of someone, would you go, oh, I'm just taking a picture, and is it the same thing?
No, it's not the same. Because that's kind of what I thought, because you're not allowed to take photos here.
No.
And last year I came up to Patrick and I said, can I draw? Can I draw and paint? And he said, well, of course you can. And I said to him, oh, well, I wasn't sure because you can't take photos. And he was like, well, that's not the same. And it isn't the same at all. I mean, because sometimes what I'm drawing looks nothing like the person, because it's art and you can do it. It's artistic license. Yeah. I don't know. It's a really good question.
Mm.
Don't bring it up too much, because then they'll say you can't do it.
I guess I want to know why it's different to be outside in a moving, living space and drawing something rather than...
The answer to that. What's your answer to that?
You know the answer, surely. You know the answer. It's just a different... It's a full body experience being outside. And, you know, I mean, I don't... I just love being outside. It makes me feel better. It's better for my health. It's better for... the sounds, like now you can hear the sounds of the splashes of the water and people chatting and the wind whistling in the trees, and that all brings something else to the drawing. So I'm trying to capture a feeling, really, I think, essentially, rather than like I said, I don't want to represent, I don't want to be purely representational. I don't want to do these really delicate literal drawings. I could just copy that off a photo. For me, being here is about soaking up the atmosphere and trying to somehow, usually pretty cack-handedly, get that into my paintings, because it's really hard. It's really hard to paint water, because it's always moving, it's always changing, and that's part of the fascination for me. Like the sky's always changing, the light's always changing, and I'm trying to work with these things and bring them. You know, sometimes it rains and I've got raindrops in my sketches, and I think that just adds. I'm going to show you one I did the other day. It was raining. We were sitting underneath an umbrella. Like, it's got all like drops of water.
Yeah.
But I love that. Like, you don't get that in a studio. And also drawing people that are moving around and doing things. Like that woman over there. Look at her. She's having a shower. That would make such a brilliant sketch. And I'd have to maybe do it in 30, like 10 seconds. Look, she's just about to go.
Yeah.
But I try and capture that, because it's not like a life drawing class where people are posed and... You know, you get to see their genitals in full display, and I'm just not interested in that. I want it to be just more mundane, really.
Just little snapshots of life.
Yeah.
What's your background? Are you trained in... Because you're very good. Your drawings are really good. So you must have been doing this for quite some time.
I've always drawn, and I come from an artistic family. So I was always encouraged to do it. Like, my mum encouraged me to have a sketchbook when I was about four, and I took it on holiday with me, and she used to draw. But I didn't go to art school, and I have a massive... I'm trying to get rid of this complex insecurity. I'm trying to see not going to art school as my unique selling point. I don't know if it's quite working, but I've done a lot of courses. Like, I did art A-level, and I wanted to go to art college and I didn't go. I got a place, but I wanted to go to Sussex. It was all a bit of a complicated. So I studied other things, and then something quite big happened in my life, and I like got this shock of, oh, we don't know whether we're going to live or die type thing. You know, like...
You?
Or... Oh, no, not to me.
Okay.
No, I lost a baby, which was was a late miscarriage. So I think it was that realisation of, oh, literally... We think we have control over our lives, and then when it comes to the crunch, we don't. Like, really, we don't. So I thought, what would I want to be doing? What do I want to do if I've only got a couple of years left? And I knew, I'd always known I wanted to be an artist, and it just felt, I just went for it. Like, yeah, I'm really glad I did, because I'm happier than I've ever been. I mean, more fulfilled than I've ever been. And I'm so jammy. Like, I get to sit here. I get to come here and just paint and draw. It's like the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be, it'd be nice if I made a bit more money, but yeah, that will come. I think it's just, I think part of it is for doing a job you love is enough. You think, oh, well, it should be enough just to be doing a job you love, but actually there is something about getting financial reward for it that makes you value it, which isn't necessarily...
I constantly try not to put money in the way.
I know.
But
I know.
It's really hard when it feels like you have to break down this whole thing in your head that you're only good if you make money out of it.
I think it's what stops a lot of people from following the path that they love.
I think it's the biggest thing that stops people.
Which is a real shame. Like, the whole thing comes back to just... When I'm outside, like when I'm running for hours or when I'm swimming, I feel it's like you become part... It sounds so cheesy. You become part of the sea when you're running or swimming. When I'm running alongside... I always run like alongside the sea, and I feel like I become part of the cliffs and part of the sea and part of the sky. I literally... This is... Like, I have to be running for about 3 hours for this to happen. It's like a drug.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah, and it's the same when you're swimming in the sea. And I feel the same when I'm drawing. And after I lost... Well, after my miscarriage, the only thing that stopped me from... got me out of my head was being outside and drawing. And drawing outside. but it was something about being outside. And it takes you out of your head. It takes you out of your body.
Art has been... something that I've come to in the last year. Yeah, I've started going.
Come to my Wednesday.
I really want to.
You so should.
I really want
Probably just be you and me, but
that's fine. I don't mind.
No, there have been a few people. And it's totally, oh, that's fab. Yeah, you should come.
But it's that thing where I think to pick up on something that you said earlier, it can, unless you've got a qualification in it or you've been told, oh, you're really creative or you're good at that, I think. A lot of people just don't believe that they are creative.
Yeah.
When I think it's such... I
totally disagree with that.
Yeah, it's an innate and human quality.
It is, completely. And also, I'm really not sure now. I used to think that talent was inherent in us. And I'm really... I'm not even sure about that. Like, I'm doing this course, an online course, which is the sort of thing I never, ever would have done. But this teacher is saying that talent is a load of baloney and basically... everyone's capable of being creative, and it's just, and I do believe this, it's just about hard work. Like, if you put in the hours, you can get really good at something, but you just need to blooming well put in, do it. That's literally what I've given myself the biggest kick up the bum recently. I've gone, just do it. Like, you know, just do it. If you want to be an artist, you've just got to call yourself an artist and just do it. I mean, maybe you can't do that if you want to be a neuroscientist. But you can...
Or a surgeon or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's certain, obviously, there's some professions where you need qualifications. Like, the best bit of advice I ever had from an artist was let yourself fail. Because most of the time you do anything creative or anything that you want to be good at, you're going to produce a lot of rubbish. And you've just got to keep trying. The older I get, the less I care. I sit on a train now and I get my sketchbook out and I just draw. And I just think... People stare at me and I just think, oh, I'm just going to carry on. And there are days I get really self-conscious, or if they're staring at me back, that's not so good. But
just draw them.
Yeah, exactly.
That was Emily Stevens there. That turned into such a nice chat. I really didn't know that it was going to go into all of these realms of kind of, well, just life, really. It was just a big, fat life chat. Yeah, we were there for hours sitting by that pool and then went for a swim, and it was very nice. You can join her for her drop-in sessions. She's there Wednesday afternoons between 1 and 2 o'clock, but she's quite flexible, I think. If you see her, then she's quite happy for you to go up and say hi and have a little chat. You can hear how enthusiastic she is about trying to get people to just start drawing and to think that it's for everyone, and what a wonderful addition to your life it can be. You can see her artwork on emilyvstevens.com. It's really good, and the stuff that she's creating at the pool is just brilliant. So I highly recommend having a look at what she's up to. All right, let's have a song, and it is Don't Worry Baby by the Beach Boys. Don't Worry Baby by the Beach Boys. Okay, this next bit of the show is a little bit weird. I genuinely can't decide if it's just massively egotistical that this has happened, but I went away and did a bit of a walk, and it was this 8-day adventure, and I went wild camping, and it was down in Cornwall, and it was quite an experience. And Ruth Allen got in touch, who has been on this show a couple of times, actually. She's the lady who ran solo through the Bosnian mountains and has done incredible things and is an outdoor therapist and all sorts of things. And she said, I would like to interview you about your experience. So I thought about that for a while, and it seems that it's happened. So I'm going to cringe my way through this next section, but this is my experience of an adventure I had, and I think it links in quite well with what Emily said about, you know, if you're going to die, we're all going to die. And what do you really want to do? What do you want to get out of life? And sometimes I think you've really got to make space to know what that answer is. So this is my chat with Ruth Allen, who was in her shed. So here we go.
What did you actually do, and why did you choose this particular route?
Well, I wanted to just go for a long walk, because I've never done that where I've carried everything on my back that I needed. I've gone off and done stuff before but I've always driven, or you know, had my van kind of somewhere nearby as backup, so I could always sleep in my van if I needed to, and then that's how I got between places. So I'd never just been on my feet, really, and it just felt like it was an extra step. It was kind of an extra level, and a higher level or something. It was like, I don't know if I'm ready for that. So yeah, because I've done stuff on my bike as well. I cycled to Cornwall. I just sort of rolled out of my driveway and cycled to Cornwall. But I slept in like pubs and things, because I did it in January. So it was this thing of combining the two things of having all of my stuff. So I was camping along the way, and it just being me walking it without any other escape route, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Cornwall, I just love. I've just been in love with Cornwall forever, and being by the sea. I love being by the sea, and I like how dramatic it is on the cliffs and everything. So I just knew that was where I was going to go.
Yeah, so it was that step up, what you sort of said, higher level. Was it that higher level?
Yeah, it was. But it was also it was the best thing I've ever done. it just was the best thing. I was so ready to do it, and I think I've been putting it off for quite a while. I thought I've had this feeling that I wanted to do it. So I made a radio show about it, which is quite often what I'll do. So when I'm interested in something, it's like, oh, I won't do it just yet. I'll talk to lots of other people who've done it first. I made a show called Pilgrimage and spoke to four people who had essentially done what I was going to do, to hear their experiences and what they got from it. And that was over a year ago. So it's just been this thing of like, you will have to do that, you know. Isn't going to make that go away. You're going to have to do it. So, yeah.
What of it was a pilgrimage for you? What makes it that, rather than just a long distance walk?
I knew it was about connection, and it felt like... over the last sort of 18 months, I've kind of had a bit of an interesting time, and a lot of that process for me in the last 18 months has been connecting more with myself and kind of trying to hear my own voice a bit more. And then also I have been getting into the more spiritual side of life, which is something I don't talk about too much, but I've kind of got into... I go to Quakers now, and I meditate, and I'm really got quite keen on sitting in silence and listening, because I've never really listened. I've always just been moving and quite an uncomfortable person within myself. So sitting and listening is something that I'm still very much learning how to do, but this walk felt like it would cement that process for me. So it was like connecting to me and then connecting to that other, whatever the other thing is that I think we're all kind of part of and swarming around in.
Absolutely. And yeah. I suppose the compelling question off the back of that is, if it was about listening, what did you hear?
What did I hear? Gosh, so many different things. It felt like every day was it so a different experience every day? Because the first night I got really scared because I was sleeping somewhere which I thought was a great spot, but it was really in the middle of nowhere. I kind of walked a lot further than I thought I was going to walk, and found this kind of field that wasn't being farmed, so it had all gone to wildflower. It was kind of like a bit of a meadow, and then there was this really lovely little oak tree, just a really sweet little oak tree in the middle of it. I was like, oh, that's where I'm going to sleep for sure. But I didn't have any sense of where any other houses were or any other people, really. And that's what I thought I was going to be trying to find every night. But it turned out that actually that really freaked me out, because there was one guy who went past on his bike and stopped and chatted to me, who turned out actually to be the gamekeeper of the land I was on. But there was something about knowing that that one guy knew where I was that just really freaked me out, because I didn't know how to get to anyone else. So that brought up quite a lot, and I had to really sit with the anxiety that came up through that experience, and not running away and thinking, well, this is the worst thing I've ever done, and well, I'm gonna die, I'm probably gonna die, you know, all of that stuff, that all of those things that go rushing through your head. So it was a real experience of just having to let all of that come up and then let it go away, and trying to just find that calmness within yourself. So there was some of that, and then a lot of it was quite playful, actually, because I think I can overthink things. I know I can overthink things, and take maybe just be a bit too, like, try too hard and take it all a bit too seriously. And actually, I found it all to be quite playful. It was like, oh, this is you can be a lot more light in spirit and a lot more joyful and a bit, and just be where you are and connect to where you are, and everything feels a bit lighter. That really came up.
Yeah, it sounds like, I was quite struck when you said that for the 18 months sort of prior that you had, you know, you'd been going on this kind of journey within yourself anyway, and there was a sense that you said, I'm not comfortable in myself sometimes. I can be quite uncomfortable as a person. And how did this walk then affect your sense of comfort within yourself?
It allowed me to put a bit of distance between me and my head. I could sort of see a bit more clearly how my brain works. It's like, I'll be at one place and think, oh, this is great, but then it'll immediately jump to, yeah, but what if? But what if, when, what if around the corner that's not going to work? And what if that goes wrong? And what if we don't find somewhere good to sleep? And what if, what if, what if, what if? So, like, oh, this is interesting. I'm actually doing this to myself all of the time without realizing, and it manifests in just a sense of tension. So to kind of just be like, oh, and to see that thought a bit more clearly, that was interesting. And it's kind of just like, oh, you can trust yourself. If you just give yourself a bit of breathing space, you can trust yourself.
It sounds like you got so much from it.
I was surprised.
Yeah, were you? It was surprising to you that you got so much from it.
Yeah, well, I knew that I knew I needed to do it, and I think it just gave me, I think when you kind of get a bit wibbled up by life, I can't really describe what happened other than it just felt like all of the rugs kind of got pulled out from my feet, and it was a bit of a surprise, and I kind of tumbled a little bit. And this was, you know, 18 months ago. But trying to kind of work your way through something like that and have to work and have to pay rent and whatever, it's quite hard. So it's almost like you don't get the time you need to fully just process what your body is trying to get out of you. I think I take a lot of strength from other people's experiences and having spoken to a lot of people, including you, actually, about how you just have to allow what comes up to come up and to let it go. And I think in my day-to-day life, I don't necessarily let that happen because you have to go and speak to someone, or you have to, you know, I've got to go out for dinner or whatever. You've got something you have to, and there's a level of having to fit into that situation where you can't maybe just let what's come up. Well, I struggle with that, and I think that's probably something I have to learn, is just being who you are, where you are, whatever.
Yeah.
But, so there was something in having nobody there that I had to hide it from, or and there was no social expectation, which is probably my own construct anyway, but that was just removed. So if I felt like I wanted to sing a bit or dance or cry or whatever, it's like, fine, just let it out. It's all good.
You're touching on something I think that's really interesting around when we are more stable within ourselves and have a really keen sense of ourselves and our, who we are and what our, as you know, and we've talked about it on here before, my trip to Bosnia, and I've talked about how that was at the end. And I suppose I'm really curious as to know what it was like for you to come to the end of that and what that brought up. Was it a good end?
It was the most hilarious end. I knew I wanted to get to the Minak Theatre, which is because I love the theatre. I just love it. I love going to the theatre. I love everything about being around it. I love it. And I had a look at what was on, and it was Sister Act. So
amazing.
I was like, what? So that's already this sort of religious thing at the end of my little pilgrimage. So, but it was sold out. So I was like, oh, okay, that's a shame. But I feel like I think if I get there, it'll be okay. So I did, I got there, and my feet were ruined by this point because I was wearing the wrong shoes, like terrible choice of shoes. And so the last day was so slow. It was super slow, and it was fine. It was really nice. I was foraging, putting stuff in my water, like elderflower in my water, and just being like, oh, this is great. And I think that's the point, actually, is slowing down. So it was kind of a good thing that I did get slowed down in a way. I knew I was going to get there. All I had to do was just get there, and it didn't matter how long it took. I got there, I got to the theatre, and I said, look, I've just walked here from Falmouth. Is there any chance I can just squeeze in? can I just nip in? And they were like, oh, well, we've had a return. We've had a return ticket.
Amazing.
So I was like, oh, brilliant. So I got that, and I went in, and there was one seat left on the front row.
Oh my goodness me.
Great. So I skipped down the steps and as best I could on broken feet, and I sat on the front row, and I was like, well, this is already brilliant. And you know when you really want to tell the people next to you, I've just done this walk and I'm now on the front. Neither of them could be less interested. And then all these nuns come on singing, and it's all like this sunset happening in the background, and I just thought this is such a great ending. And then it was the interval, and I've only got hot chocolate because it gets cold. And as I was going up the steps, I saw Alan Titchmarsh sitting there. And this was part of my whole thing, was because sometimes I wonder if I've got the right sort of personality to be in media generally, and especially with some of the stuff I've done lately, you have to have a bit more of an upbeat than what I am naturally, which is, you know, I like taking a back seat and letting the other person kind of tell their story, really. So there was a bit of, I'm not sure if this is quite right. And then I'd won his award a couple of years ago, Alan's award. It's called the New Talent Award. So I went and sat next to him and was like, all right, Alan. And I was like, oh, I won your award a couple of years ago. And we had this really nice chat, and he asked about the walk. Well, I told him that I'd done a walk. He was asking the sort of things I've been doing, and he was like, oh, you're my little protege. I was like, yeah, all right, Alan, let's not get carried away. He was just really lovely, and he went, oh, bless you for doing that walk, that's really sweet. And I was like, all right, then I'm going to nip off and get my drink. The last scene of the Sister Act is where they perform for the Pope, and then they go, and His Grace, and they all looked up, and it was Alan Titchmarsh dressed as the Pope in this pulpit thing. I was like, well, shut up. That's ridiculous. I'd been actually blessed by
You had been Alan actually Titchmarsh, blessed the Pope. By the Minak Pope at the end of your pilgrimage. Of course I was.
And that's, I just couldn't believe it. I was like, well, this has to be, well, firstly, my feet didn't work anymore, so I couldn't really walk.
You couldn't carry on.
Where would I go from that? It just felt like it's just this game. We're all just part of this game. It's just so playful. And if you just let yourself kind of be taken along with it, just follow it, then
you just don't resist it.
Don't resist it, and it's all there. And it's just like someone's dancing with you, and all you have to do is you just have to dance back. So there we go. That was my experience of my little trip and why I've had a month off doing this show. Totally comfortable. Feels totally comfortable hearing yourself talk at length about something. All good. I did get a lot out of that experience, and I guess I wanted to share it because I think it's available to all of us. You know, finding these things within yourself feels like such an important part of being alive. And that kind of, you know, Emily talked about it, and then that experience that I had there. And next up, I'm going to speak to Will Parsons, who's of the British Pilgrimage Trust. And we had the experience of a micro pilgrimage, just trying to see if we can have these mini experiences so that we don't have to take too much time out if that's not an available thing to us. And to see what comes up if you kind of reduce it down, but have almost the same intention as if you're going on a longer one. But first, we're going to have a song, and I'm going to play Everywhere by Fleetwood Mac. Can you hear me calling out your name? You know that I'm falling and I don't know what to say. I'll speak a little louder, I'll even shout. That's Everywhere by Fleetwood Mac. That song's slightly in homage to the next piece because me and Will, we went to a place called Holywell in Eastbourne. It was this lovely, beautiful little experience. And then at one point, all of these teenagers came onto the beach where we were. And surprisingly to everyone, I think, they were playing Fleetwood Mac just at volume. I didn't expect that at all from a bunch of 17-year-olds on the beach. And maybe that's my own prejudice coming out there, but it's just hilarious. So that's kind of in honour of them, and who you hear a little bit of nearer the end of this little segment. So yes, this next little segment is with Will Parsons. Now, he's working on reopening something called the Old Way, which runs from Southampton all the way through to Canterbury. And it was an old pilgrimage route from many centuries ago. All of the pilgrimage routes in Britain got shut down by Henry VIII. Good old Henry. Because he saw it as a Catholic thing, and he was trying to claim his position as head of the church, and he didn't want any of this old stuff to happen. So he shut down all of the pilgrimage routes in Britain. So there's such little history around what the heritage is of British pilgrimage, because it was just all burnt and trashed and got rid of. So where I met him is on this route, and as I say, it's called Holywell, and it's near Eastbourne. So I was really interested in understanding if pilgrimage has to be this big, long adventure, or if we can take it in little segments and see what comes from that. And just understanding maybe what makes something a pilgrimage and the different rituals and that weave their way through these experiences. So this is Will explaining what pilgrimage is to him and how he understands it. And this was our little adventure in Holywell.
I like to talk about pilgrimage in terms of song. I call it the Song of Pilgrimage. So that's actually a handy acronym. self, other, nature, and goodness, or God, if you like. And all four layers of benefit. It's like a pebble being thrown in the water. It ripples outward. You start with yourself. You know, you're making pilgrimage for personal, health, physical, emotional reasons. But then you're also doing it because maybe you've got family and friends who you're trying to be better for, or to benefit the communities through which you pass, you know, for other people. But then there's the end nature, the non-human world, the essential background of life on Earth. Pilgrimage is, you know, partly for nature. We're not driving, we're living the most sincere ecological life for a little while that we can. Our impact is as low as it can be for a little while. And then there's the whole spiritual layer, the sort of doing it for a greater good, the interconnectivity of all life, some people call God, by whatever that means for you. It's open to all, obviously. So you're asking, what's my intention? It's a big question. On what level? Personally, I'm mapping up and down times at the moment, you know? There's trouble in, as well as great blessings, there's also trouble. Maybe they always go together, I don't know. And I would like to seek a little balance, and a pilgrimage is always good for me to find that little bit of balance, internal balance, to appreciate and be grateful for what is beautiful and good, as well as gaining the strength to deal with what's hard. So, what about you?
I've returned from a longer pilgrimage. Not that long, it's only 8 days. I want to integrate smaller versions of that into my life, or see if that's a possible thing.
Find the blessings in a microdose.
Exactly. Yeah. With the goal of, similarly to you, feeling more settled, a bit more grounded, amidst all of the swirl of life, really.
Traditionally, in the West, the way we've done that is not to sit still under a tree. It's to go out on a dynamic search. You know, we go out for the Holy Grail, on the Odyssey. These are the heroes of the Western peoples. We're the restless people. You know, we like to roam. And through movement, we find our stillness. And through seeking, we find our wholeness. So what I'd really like us to do today is make a micro-pilgrimage to a holy well that has been covered by the spring tides and is now buried under shingle. It's the holy well of an area called Holywell, and it is at the foot of Eastbourne, just between the town and the South Downs. And this is a very ancient holy well that is both rising from below and is also sinking through the chalk cliffs. There was a convent built just above it, and some people say that this is the whole reason Eastbourne is here in the first place. Water, fresh, flowing, potable water, healing water, being crucial infrastructure for life on Earth. Much like the British Pilgrimage Trust is doing a pilgrimage to uncover it, you and I today, Charlotte, are going to uncover the Holy Well of Holywell and hopefully get our hands in it, hopefully drink from it. Can you see where we're going?
I can. It's basically straight down this cliff that we're sitting on top of currently. We've found this great little nugget of chalk that's poking out into the skies, and now we're sitting just slightly below the apex of it and looking down on the beach at some people who are scrambling over the rocks.
And it's about an eighth of a mile?
It's very close. There's a lot of steps leading down there.
And idea is that pilgrimage can be tiny. It doesn't have to be a great big hoofing yomp through the countryside. You can combine a really good intention, basically, in nature is enough to call it pilgrimage. And let's see how well it works for you. Welcome to the beach, Charlotte.
A short trip from the high to the low.
It's got a wonderful bleakness to it, doesn't it?
It does today. It's misty. It's slightly hanging over the white cliffs.
And, you know, strange litter and graffiti. It's
sort of industrial meets natural.
Mm-hmm. That's South England, South English coast, I suppose.
Where are we looking for the well?
It's this way. It's left, over the wooden groin. So this is the Holy Well of Holywell. And as you can see, no water to be seen.
No water at all.
Should we go close and see if we can hear
Yes.
water?
There's just a sign. It almost looks like graffiti. It's yellow writing in capitals saying the Holy Well on a piece of wood. It looks like driftwood with some bolts sticking out of it. And it's almost become, it looks shrine-like, with people's devotions of love to each other on pebbles and some roses that have seen better days. There's a crevice in the chalk cliff face where we would hope to see the water, but it has been, well, there's nothing there.
There's
other than
there.
Pebbles.
They say that a journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. Yeah. So to push the analogy, the digging out of a holy well starts with a single stone. And can you have the first honour, please? The first stone.
Falls. I would love that, yes.
Correct. In Arthurian legends of holy wells, there's always a well maiden, a resident intermediary between the spring or the well and us. And this takes the form of a person or another animal. So you must always be respectful to strangers, whether human or other, when at a holy well. And I think this little spider here might be our well maiden. They have the power to grant wellness or disease. So be good. Look, there it is, it's responding. Hello, Speedre. Wishing you well.
Here we go. Let's go.
We might as well get comfy. This will take a while. It's not easy on the hands already. We should have brought gloves.
Have had that thought.
Yes.
But then is it real enough if you're wearing gloves? You know, is there any truth in
in the fact that a pilgrimage means a certain level of suffering?
Pilgrimage is certainly inconvenient. I generally find that it's a day's walk to 20 minutes drive. You know, so if you just want to get there, you get in a car. This is the long, slow, difficult way. And yeah, I think connecting with your body is often painful. And look, every time we're digging in now, more stones roll back.
Roll in, yeah. It can make you feel like you're not getting anywhere. But slowly, slowly, we are.
There's a song we sometimes sing as pilgrims, with water, which you're going to have to learn. It goes, water flows, life is given, rises from earth, hence here, falls from heaven. Water flowing, so we sing, bless the holy spring. And it all fills in as I sing. Water,
what does that
flows.
Mean?
It means we're on our way. Life is given, rises from earth, falls from heaven. Water flowing, so we sing, bless the holy spring. Come on, Sean. Water flows, life is given, rises from earth, falls from heaven. Water flowing, so we sing, bless the holy spring. So as we sang Falls from Heaven, all the stones from the edge of a hole fell into the hole. Wonderful. Wonderful. I hear you, holy spring. I see water.
There's definitely water there.
I see water. Here it comes. Oh my goodness. Look, 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 look.
Look at that.
Hang on, not just water. Wait, it's holy water. Wow. I mean, that's
look
what taken
that.
Us half an hour of digging.
Yeah.
We've got a sort of 5 centimetre by 5 centimetre holy puddle. So what we're going to do now, Charlotte, is the water's running clear. So we are going to filter some.
Okay.
And drink it. But the first thing I think we should both do is give a gift. So I'm actually just going to go and grab some silver. Silver's antimicrobial, antibacterial. It doesn't kill the aquatic life. You chuck in a tuppenny piece now, it's full of nickel and copper, and it harms the water. You know, it's a classic example of us doing things wrong. Meaning well, but the road to hell paved with good intent. It costs about the same as a lottery ticket. It's a 2 quid piece
okay.
of silver.
It looks a little bit like a watch battery.
Water like silver, shiny things. So we're going to give it as a gift. But first of all, we're going to make a wish on it. So now I've got this amazing filter. This is absolutely potable, delicious, holy well water.
I'm going in. Cheers.
Go well.
It's chalky.
Yeah.
Mm. But it's not at all unpleasant.
And that is the holy well water of Holy Well Eastbourne. Cheers. We've now got to our destination, but we've collected our blessing. We have it in hand, literally. We've done our good deed. We've given our gift. We've sung our song. We've met the locals. We've enjoyed the ambience. And now the next part is the return. And so often in Britain, around the world, we get to the holy place painstakingly through walking, and then we get a train back. And we wonder why we feel disconnected and imbalanced at the end. It's because we haven't returned. So as we walk away from the holy well, from the cliff, toward the urban world, can we sing that song together, please? Water flows, life is given, rises from earth, falls from heaven. Water flowing, so we sing, bless the holy spring.
Yeah, I did sing there, I did sing. That was such a nice experience, and I think that last bit there about talking about the return, it's such an important segment. We actually talked about that for a lot longer, but it's so hard to fit everything in. There's a whole thought about you should make the destination just the halfway point, and then you get a chance to process everything on the way back. Because I know certainly from my experience, I know I banged on about myself way too much on this show. But I do know that when that whole thing happened at the theatre and there was Alan and all of that, it's like, what do you do with this experience? And I kind of got on a train and came home and just slammed back into normal life. And it just felt like I'd missed out a section. So I think a theme that's really come up a lot through all of these things today is processing, allowing ourselves that time to really to process things. And the different ways of doing that. So yeah, this show's been a bit more of an internal kind of exploration, an internal growing wild maybe. So yes, thank you to all of those who have been involved in that conversation. Thank you, Ruth, for your excellent interviewing skills from your shed. Emily, go and see Emily at Pell's Pool and see her artwork. And then if you want to find out more about British Pilgrimage and Will Parsons, then go to britishpilgrimage.org and a lot more information is there. And that route will be reopening fully with a guidebook and everything very soon. So have a look at the information on that website and maybe just see if you can go out and do some of this stuff. Maybe even if it's going somewhere and sitting down and drawing, or if you go for a walk, but it's not just a walk. If you set out with this intention and a destination and to see what comes back, it's really fascinating how it's quite different. I mean, even after me and Will there did this piece, we went out for dinner, and the waitress that we had turned out to have lived on very near to the Camino de Santiago, which is just like, what? Because that's the most walked pilgrimage route, and it goes through kind of France and Spain. So yeah, it was like, what are the chances of that happening? Just things like that seem to come up more and more if you set out with these different intentions. It's quite fascinating. So thank you for listening. Do get in touch. There are many different ways. There's Instagram and Twitter, which is at growingwildfm. You can email growingwildreverb@gmail.com, or you can get hold of me through the show page, which is radioreverb.com. And then search for shows, and then there's a contact page under Growing Wild. I'll also try and put up a few links on that as well to bits and bobs that have come up from today's show. I'm going to play you out with a song, and it's going to be Basement Jacks, and Do Your Thing. I've totally rediscovered Basement Jacks. It's making me relive my youth. So once again, thank you for listening, and do let me know if you end up trying any of this stuff. I'd love to hear. Until next time, go well. I don't need no TV, I don't need no news.